This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
At some point, I was kind of expecting you to have JFDI just tattooed, right, on your knuckles. Just let's do it, right? I can feel your excitement for the bigger picture piece. And it's infectious. I think there's a lot from both a character, a personality, and just perhaps a background and experience point of view that will help take everything in Riskfluent to the next level.
You're so much more articulate than me as well, Pete, so I think people will find it quite refreshing if you're on the podcast a little bit more. So
I love some of the listeners that I've had some feedback from, and they said, Pete, I've loved hearing your stories, but I felt like I needed a thesaurus, right, every time you started speaking. So I'm going to put you on the spot for a second, like, James. What are you most excited about?
I do think there is some really fucking cool shit we could do on the technical side of things as well. Approach that in a way where it is value add to the success of the operations.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that are listening to this are thinking, yeah, operational risk management sounds like the future of where safety needs to be. Are we as safety professionals purely about compliance? No, are we? We're not about just compliance. We're about so much more than that.
The biggest challenge I discovered, you have to help a company unlearn safety first before learning safety, really. Yeah.
For me, safety is an outcome of operational excellence. Mm. And I cannot wait to get my teeth into helping businesses be the best that they can possibly be to make safety better for them, their business, their people and their future.
I'm buzzing, mate. And then if we fuck it up, we can always just cut it. Hello everyone, welcome to Branded Safety. Obviously in the last episode I said we're going to announce who the person is that is joining the team, and for some strange reason, Peter, you're sitting here in the room.
I'm indeed.
So obviously it's Peter Jenkins. So I reckon most people that listen to Rebranded Safety Watch will probably already know who you are.
I'd like to think so, unless people have forgotten about the quarterly co-hosts that I did.
Three whole episodes
that might not be ideal.
That is a good point, actually. And not so long ago, you were the second to most recent, I think
Tommy
Geraghty is the most recent, I think, before that was you. So yeah, and it didn't come from that, actually, either, did it? So that was maybe people will be like, oh, maybe they got talking after the quarterly co-host. No, not the case. Well, so go on.
I think we've jumped up quite a bit, because I know that, and I think it was the first episode, I said long time listener, first time caller, and now it's first time employee for Riskfluent as well.
That's
really
true.
So yeah, no, I'm genuinely delighted to be joining both you and Cherry as part of Riskfluent as a senior partner within the business. This comes at a wonderful time for Riskfluent, and a wonderful time really for the profession, for the industry, just with so much technical, transformational and innovative, cutting edge stuff that's going on. Honestly, I cannot wait. Absolutely can't wait to get started.
You're so much more articulate than me as well, Pete. So I think people will find it quite refreshing if you're on the podcast a little bit more. I'm like, shit, that was so much better than what I had planned in my head.
I don't know. I mean, I love some of the listeners that I've had some feedback from, and they said, Pete, we've loved listening to you, we've loved hearing your stories, but I felt like I needed a thesaurus, right, every time you started speaking. So I think this time I'm going to try and keep it. I'm going to try and do less Pete.
So I get similar feedback. See, I told you once we press record and just start talking, we'll go into it. But ultimately, and I want to come, I'm bring it back to talk about what we're going to do within the business and stuff like that. I think you and the thesaurus feedback is the same as me and the swearing feedback. Like, oh, James, I love what you do, but I wish you could stop fucking swearing.
Yeah.
How do you, in your head, compute with that? Because I'm not going to lie, it's gone through my head. Peter is phenomenal. And the way your brain works, and everyone will say it, is just mind-blowing. But yeah, I've sat there sometimes and gone, what did he just say? How do you kind of compute? Because that kind of gone through my head is that some of our customers might be a bit like that. So, and I'm conscious whether sometimes I turn the swearing, I never turn it up. I think it's always just up, but sometimes turn it down. Do you have that in your head as well? Or?
So I do, but it's... it's slightly different in some ways. So I'm a massive believer that to be the best version of yourself as a professional, you have to have the world-class best communication techniques and abilities possible.
Right.
And actually having a bit of reflection on a lot of the feedback that I've been given kind of said, actually, Pete, tone it down a bit. Just right. just turn it down a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that you can be more effective, that you can be an effective communicator. Mm. You can have the best ideas in the world, but they're going to mean jack shit if people can't understand them.
Yeah.
If they don't know what you're talking about. So
and do you reflect on it and you think you've turned it down? Or you?
I do.
Did it depend on situations as well sometimes? Or audience?
A little bit. So I think where I'm really excited for taking my career for the rest of my life is just making sure that whatever we're talking about, it's simple, it's understandable, it's effective, but it is applicable. Mm. I cannot wait for every time we're having a chat on things like rebranding safety, from everything that we do in work together, going through everything with clients, customers, listeners, you name it, and they get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's almost no way that they couldn't get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It has to be simple. It has to be easy to digest.
It's not going
to
work if it is.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Exactly. So it's actually, I owe a lot, really, to the opportunities that I've had through doing the podcast with you, through just time that we've spent together on the Health and Safety Network, everything to try and actually just think, how can I be the best version of myself through making everything that I say simpler?
Yeah, that's so cool. Because I just, it's so, we've been texting about Drive to Survive, and you know Gunther, and he swears a lot.
Yeah.
And so I obviously, I connect to him immediately, because he's just so authentic, and like, he's like, I swear, and that's just... And I've just listened on the way here to him on the High Performance Podcast.
Oh,
Have you listened to
it? I have. It's an amazing episode. Really good.
So I found it really interesting that at the end, I felt that what they, you know, when they summarise what they've learned from it, I personally think they got it way wrong.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because they at the end, they were like, so Gunther said a few times in there, like, I don't watch Drive to Survive because what you see on Drive to Survive is me.
Yeah.
And that is me doing my job.
Yeah.
So basically what he said is what we see on Netflix is authentically him.
Yeah.
At the end of the show, they summarized it to go, on this podcast, it was nice to see the unedited, non-bombastic, I think they said, like no swearing, just the true Gunther. And I was like, No. He literally said that what he's doing for you now is turning the swearing off because you asked him to.
I totally
get it. So it wasn't an offense. So what I thought was, they don't like the swearing, I think.
Hmm.
So they've perceived him completely different. They perceive him as they actually use the phrase caricature of the him in Drive to Survive, and what they got was a real version. And it made me reflect on me, which is when you were talking about the thesaurus thing, made me think about me reflecting on me, if that makes sense, of like, are people perceiving me completely different if they do or don't like mind swearing?
Yeah.
I thought it's interesting.
No, I totally get where you're coming from. I think that there's a lot of listeners that will be kind of reflecting on just what we're talking about now and thinking, does changing the way that I am or the way that I interact with certain stakeholders, certain people, negatively affect my integrity? Mm. Am I being
authentic?
False? Yeah, am I being false? I'm being less authentic. And I say no.
Yeah,
obviously would, because I'd say in essence that makes you a better communicator in those certain circumstances. Mm. But perhaps from the fundamentals, when you look at things like swearing, when you look at things like keeping it simple, I think there's a load. Just everyone can kind of just be true to themselves.
Yeah,
around that as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I genuinely, as I say, very very excited by what is to come. Really, really am.
Mm. I'm quite excited just to have more conversations like this, in a way. Just nice to have, like, me and Shez talk about like this all the time.
Yeah.
Like, just like, I think, don't know whether she likes it or not, but I just like talking like this. But yeah, that was cool. Right, okay, so back on track. We put a post out a while ago, and if anyone who's watching this or listening to this had saw the post, they'd be like, wow, Peter's kind of took a massive step down. So that's not really true. What happened was, we were kind of going through this process, and I'll be honest, we were getting to a point where we're thinking, shit, actually, we're not going to get, I think, what we need, which is a problem, because I needed someone that could really just take over a large chunk of the customer base and hit the ground running, which obviously you could. And then I was literally come off the back of a network call, which you were in, and you were asking a load of questions about like me and the role and how it's like. But I genuinely didn't get a vibe that you were that you were probing. I don't know if you were in the moment, but I didn't get a vibe.
I was probing a little bit.
Yeah, didn't get it. I did not get it. Because in my, and that's why when I text you back, when after you text me, I was like, mate, I didn't even think that you would be kind of, one, definitely not in our price range. We kind of had to have a conversation about it. But ultimately, the next one was, like, it was like, I just didn't even see it as a, because, I don't know, I had blinders on that we had and could only work with an entry-level one, and we were just going to have to kind of suck it up. And when you messaged me, I was sitting downstairs, and I'd come off that call, and me and Colin had stayed on the call afterwards, and I said to Colin, I don't know, I'm a bit worried. I think I might need to up this, like, my salary range quite a lot. Might have to reassess what I'm looking for. And I came downstairs fucking bummed out, like proper bummed out. And I said to Shez, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how to do this. And we were talking, and literally my phone went, and I literally went, hang on a minute, Shez, Peter Jenkins just messaged me. And she went, fuck off. And I went, no, seriously. And she was like, what, about the role? And I was like, yeah. So obviously I read out your 4-page letter that you'd wrote.
Yeah. I mean, come on, it's a modern cover letter now. You just put it on WhatsApp. It's fine.
So I messaged like a couple of I read the couple of paragraphs out to Shez, and we both just sat there and was like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, in that moment, I'd already decided. Yeah. I was like, yeah, 100%. Like, I will make this work. Because I knew straight off, like, you're a head of safety. That is 100% what we needed. But ultimately, I was like, that is totally going to need to be renegotiated, which I don't want to talk about in here. It's not a place to talk about. But ultimately, it was like, I didn't matter. I needed to make that work.
Do you know, I totally really appreciate you hearing that, James. I really do. And it's from the other side. I mean, I'll give you, I'll give listeners as well a bit of an insight into a sort of couple of thought processes that kind of went through my mind in anticipation of this and kind of as we went through things. So to start with, let's, if we just kind of chart career progression by title to date, right? So finished a 4-year sandwich degree on environmental health or in environmental health, where I was a student environmental health officer for a year in a local council. Finished that, did graduate ambassador, which was kind of soft skill development sessions going out across the UK to basically deliver everything from presentation skills, interview skills, how to revise properly, what kind of learner are you, all of that really good stuff to 16 to 18 year olds in anticipation of them coming into higher education.
Cool.
Loved it, but a year's contract. Got to the end of that and thought, oh, geez, I'd better do something with my degree right, at this point, because I had nothing to do with it. So went down to London as assistant health and safety manager at the London Hilton on Park Lane. So assistant manager, technically, from a health and safety function from that point of view. Left London, went up to food manufacturing to start as health and safety advisor. So kind of gone, this is 2013, student environmental health officer, then 2015, graduate ambassador, 2016, she advisor, 2017, she manager. And then I think it was 2020, was then group health and safety manager. And then this year was head of safety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't shy away from the fact that by the time that I joined Miss Fluent, I've only been head of safety for 6 months.
Mm.
From my point of view, I've loved working with the team that I have done as head of safety. Some fantastic work that goes on across an organisation with over 20,000 employees, you know, it's a hell of a thing to be involved with. And some of the activities that I've managed to have touch points with, engage with, gee, some people spend their entire careers not going anywhere near those type of things.
Mm.
But fundamentally, to have the opportunity to take a step back for a second and say, right, well, actually, every time I take a step up, I'm narrowing what I want, what I can ultimately do with my life, almost in some respects. I feel like I'm just getting to the top of an apex in health and safety, that it's very difficult to move either side of. It's very difficult to move out of.
Right.
And it's very difficult in some respects once you can specialise in a certain area or a certain, I'm going to say, either process or kind of element within safety, be that a certain transformational bit, a certain technical bit, to then jump out and apply yourself elsewhere. And I thought, geez, I've turned 30. This is an opportunity now to say, is this where my life trajectory really is? This how I really want to take it? And I've been fortunate enough to have an opportunity to reflect on that through some recent annual leave, and literally got to the end of that annual leave and then saw that you were posting a job and thought, oh my God, the stars have aligned here. I get an opportunity to help a thriving business, a startup stage that's literally changing the face of safety. Literally, oh God, without wanting to get too cheesy here, rebranding safety. One intervention, ding, one podcast at a time, ding, 50 points. But that's what you're doing. And you're making massive strides as part of that. So to be able to kind of get in at the ground level almost and say, right, this is the first stage of growth. How can I help? How can I help change the face of a profession from within this business, from within the opportunities that it presents itself, working across a load of different sectors, with a load of different businesses, everything from small one-employee businesses all the way through to major multinationals. I mean, this is an incredible opportunity from that point of view. And I'll be honest with you, if worst comes to worst, I've got another 30-odd years worth of working before I have a chance to retire. But no, genuinely, seriously though, it's very much a... It's less about perhaps a career step back as much as it's a life step up.
Interestingly as well, like we kind of talking about it like it's a step down or a step up, but like what defines that, like the size of the company? There is this thing where it is like a step up is a step up in title, salary and size of business or brand, and I'm just kind of like, because I think it's very different to work for a corporate than it is a medium business or a small business or a startup or whatever. And actually, some people thrive in corporate environments. Personally, I don't. Like, working for corporates was the worst thing I could have ever done. I'm working with some of our smaller customers. Like, I just love how dynamic it is. So, yeah, I do think there is maybe a bit of societal, I don't know.
Well, it's... Perhaps a different question is, how do we as professionals define the value that either we give or that we feel we provide? Is it based on a title hierarchy, or is it based on the fulfillment that we get from what we do? Because I I'd had a lot of opportunity to reflect over sort of recent months, really. And when I was saying about that jump from finishing my degree to go into graduate ambassador. At that time that I was in graduate ambassador, I had the opportunity to do a lot of volunteering. But a lot of my volunteering was actually focused on commercializing small and medium enterprises and public sector services for compliance-based approaches around environmental health. So there's a lot of words that I don't really said a lot, but imagine, imagine if you wanted to say, right, how can I commercialize supporting cafes and restaurants with their food safety requirements, and
contributing to their like margins, so to speak, instead of it being just a as a compliance cost.
Looking at whoever was going to try and deliver that solution, and then saying, right, how can we commercialize it? How can we basically make it profitable, successful, and sustainable? And a lot of my kind of volunteering from probably 2015 up to kind of 2019, pretty much the start of COVID, was really focused on that. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I got seeing these kind of businesses thrive and fly was brilliant. There is a bit of a cop-out here because unfortunately there was a lot of NDAs, so I can't really talk about a lot of them. And I know how that sounds.
I love an NDA.
I know how that sounds. But again, to kind of when this came up and think, right, geez, this fits so much into something that I spent years of my life doing outside of work. But now I have the opportunity to get paid for it a little bit. It just really spoke to me, and it really kind of gave me an opportunity to think, this is something that is fundamentally fulfilling in so many different ways. So why wouldn't you take the chance and go for it and really make a difference in different ways?
Wow, amazing. When I was thinking about it, and we are so different in so many ways, but then quite similar in so many other ways as well. But ultimately, I am not a very thorough person at all. I'm not detail orientated at all, which you clearly are very thorough and very detail orientated. So, which I really quite like the different dynamics of, like, I think actually that the company like Risk Fluid is hugely going to benefit from like just how different your brain works to how mine does, but yet we are quite aligned in that approach and what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
There's that consistent golden thread, but ultimately our brains work different, which I think for our customers would be a great thing. But working together, I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah.
That sometimes it might be that James needs to be a bit more Pete and Pete needs to be a bit more James sometimes. But ultimately, like, I think that's going to be real interesting.
I at some point, I was kind of expecting you to have JFDI just tattooed, right, on your knuckles. Yeah. Just do it, right?
It's very much my approach.
And for me, I mean, I said at the start of this, I don't have a pen and a notepad here at the moment. And I feel almost naked. I genuinely feel pretty much naked for not having kind of like copious notes that I'm making, trying to think, well, what point am I going to make next? Yeah, how does that kind of link back to what we've said?
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think there's a lot from both a character, a personality, and just perhaps a background and experience point of view that will help take everything in Risk Fluent to the next level, but also to take what is already happening and say, right, well, how can we take what's good, make it great, take what's great, make it the best literally that it possibly can be.
Yeah.
At this point, I was about to segue into a couple of things, but I don't know if we can talk about them at the moment for what's coming up. I was just thinking, really.
We can cut them out.
If suddenly kind of like you hear us mid laugh after not saying anything yet, we know that we've kind of cut it a little bit. But I know that we were saying that there's quite a few different bits, sort of, from if we think about like Risk Fluent, generally speaking, what's offered. We can, I suppose, categorize it with technical, transformational, and then fire, really, from that point of view. So I'm going to put you on the spot for a second, right, James. What are you most excited about?
Oh. My passion is 100% transformational.
Yeah.
The I think the technical side of the business needs someone with your brain. With your kind of you've over the years in like the network previously, Malia, like it's fascinated me to just watch you. Like, I remember mid COVID and like sitting there listening to you sometimes being like, the freaking size of the molecule is this, and the size of the, and I was just like, I haven't even like, I was running a trade, I was a head of safety for a trade association, like a whole industry, and I was like, I haven't looked into it this far. So it was like there's that part of it where I am massively excited to see you with the customers, but also get a different way of thinking about things on the transformational side as well, because I don't want the transformational side to be the world according to James, because that's never going to be a good thing. So there's that. If I was to, I do think there is some really fucking cool shit we could do on the technical side of things as well. Like, I want to approach, so technical, so I better explain for the customers, for the listeners in case. So what we call technical and Risk Fluent is essentially SHEQ, is safety, health, environment and quality. So it's a bog standard approach to like health and safety, but it's not the bog standard approach to safety, obviously, because that's kind of, we try to do it a little bit different, but it is normal safety consultancy.
Yeah.
And then transformational is what people would look at as like HOP consultancy, New View, culture change, behavioral-based safety. It's all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So typically in the transformational side, we're working with safety teams and more mature businesses, in quotations. And typically in the technical side, the check work is very much smaller businesses. And sometimes it very much is they need this badge and they need that.
Yeah.
But so much potential there to approach that differently and approach that, because approach that in a way where it is value add to the success of the operations, and look at it more holistically and have conversations where like we're going, actually we've got time to sit and go, what's coming up and what's changing, and what are we seeing out here that we need to tell our customers about?
Yeah.
And proper risk management instead of just shitty RAMs and stuff like that. So actually, like, whilst I am excited about the transformational side, I am actually more excited about it not being technical and transformational.
Yeah.
About it being, it's just one fucking approach to risk management.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think this is kind of the first step towards that now, because
yeah.
I can get a little bit of brain space to go into that, to go and kind of focus on that business development, whilst also having someone to bounce stuff off of who thinks slightly differently to me.
Yeah.
So I think this is the first step of it not being two different departments and actually just being the way we do what I would love it to be called one day in operational risk management. Yeah. So a very, very long answer to that question, but that's probably where my brain's going and what I'm more excited about.
I can feel your excitement for the bigger picture piece. I completely can. Mm. And it's infectious. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are listening to this and thinking, yeah, operational risk management sounds like the future of where safety needs to be.
Hopefully.
from my point of view, I see so many benefits for businesses of every size. Rather than necessarily thinking, oh, today I'm going to be looking at Pure, tomorrow I'm going to look at working out, tomorrow, next day I'm going to work at confined space. Don't get me wrong, topical health and safety will always be important.
Yeah.
But arguably, should we necessarily be pitching everything we do topically, or should we actually be thinking, well, let's look at more of the patterns behind stuff?
Mm.
I mean, there was a quote that I've used from you quite a lot that I'm about to butcher now completely.
From me?
From you. God. And I've repeated this many, many a time. And it's where you described how we view safety in a business and the way that we talk about it, the way that we share the excitement about it, or in some ways actually we don't share the excitement about it. Because we wouldn't go to a finance business partner and say, your target this year, mate, break even. What? No, get out. Not going to happen. You're about the profit.
Yeah.
And in the same vein, compliance, level zero of compliance and safety, it's just doing what we need to do, is breaking even.
Yeah.
But are we as safety professionals purely about compliance? No, are we? I was going to say, never mind. We're not. We're not about just compliance. We're about so much more than that. We're about the profit in safety.
Yeah.
And actually, rather than necessarily talking about topics, well, in some cases, sometimes we might need to bring it back down to basics and go through information, instruction, supervision, and training.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority throughout my entire career to date of public liability, motor fleet, and employer liability incidents and accidents that have occurred can pretty much be brought back down to the simple four things.
Mm.
Have we told people what they're doing?
Yeah.
Have we got proof that they know what we're doing, what they're doing? Is there enough supervision? Mm. Do we have documented systems that are basically following a PDCA cycle that takes all of that, brings it together, improves it, links it back to people? A very basic example would be saying, right, have you got risk assessments and safe systems work?
Mm.
And if you do, are they linked up together?
Yeah.
Are you giving people four bits of documents when actually you could just give them a pictorial-based safe system of work that integrates the controls in each procedural step, get one sign-off, and you've done everything that you need to do at that point. That's, for me, that's where I'm really excited about thinking about the patterns, thinking about how we can just make it simpler, make it better, make it more effective for everyone, for the business owners, the managers, the supervisors, but critically, the people at the front line who need it the most.
Yeah.
That I cannot wait to properly sink my teeth into, because there's some amazing changes.
There's so much there. There's so much there as well. Like, I fucking love looking at out like different professions and how they do what they do and comparing it to safety, and finance often comes up in my brain. If you were to sit in a boardroom, like if you were to just look at the way we report on safety, and I did this exercise with a customer the other day where it said, okay, here's a hit with a boardroom and you're the finance director, and it's your agenda item now to give the monthly report for finance. Roughly how many things are you bringing up? And they were like, I don't know, like the tax calculations, the cost of the business, the new sales maybe, or sales this month, cash flow maybe, budget forecast. I'm just gonna shut this window.
Yeah, it's all right.
Oh, that's better. Cash flow, like they list about six things.
Yeah.
And And then I was like, all right, cool. Went to a different person. You're now the director of safety, and it's your agenda item for safety. Yeah. How many things are you bringing up? Audits. Yep. Accidents and incidents. Yep. Near misses. Yep. Yeah, that's probably it. And I was like, wow. So let's compare that now to the equivalent in finance. What are we saying? Accidents. We've not gone bankrupt this month. So that's good news, everybody. Well done. Audits. Yeah, the tax man's not turned up this month. So that's good. Near misses. Yeah, everyone's paid us this month.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I tell you what, I'll throw another wild card in there. And this is one that I'm a massive, massive believer of. You can't improve what you don't measure, and you don't measure what you don't know. And the amount of businesses that will audit something and then not track the actions that come up from it, not put those as a performance indicator. I mean, it sounds so obvious when you say it, but an effective business from a safety point of view will have closed out all of their actions from an accident. But how many businesses have got all of those actions from their accidents on a tracker that when it comes down to those meetings and they say, right, how many people have had accidents this month? Oh, we've had five.
No, I don't know when that's cut off. But yeah, so you, that's annoying, isn't it?
I tell you what though, how good is the fact that you've got like an actual slap cut?
It's like I knew subconsciously. If only I didn't fucking look at the camera when I did it, just because I was just so into our conversation.
So are we going to say basically if I can right, for those who have now just literally heard a very strange slap sound from there, the camera literally just cut out right as James closed the window. Obviously surprised the camera, right? I think it's fair to say that engrossed in the conversation that
it woke up. Right. Yeah, and was like, shit, what am I doing?
Yeah, there you go.
So but you were talking about how businesses essentially are not very good at tracking this, like we'll track incidents, but we're not tracking our response to those incidents.
Exactly, 100%. And when I think about some of the major value that safety professionals can add, don't get me wrong, tracking things like the amount of accidents that we have, where these accidents happen, what topics they're involved with, really, really important. But as a business owner, or business owners or MDs that I've spoken to, I say, what's more important to you, knowing that you've had five accidents or knowing that the 20 actions that have come from them have all been closed out within a set period of time and 100% of those actions have been validated by your competent person in the business? Because for me, don't get me wrong, I want to know that I've had accidents, but I also want to know that the actions that will stop them happening again have been done.
Yeah.
And the competent person that we've employed to help us out with this stuff has double-checked them.
Yeah. I would hold my hands up and say, like, our customers have not had that in, like, that. What you and that is where, when you message me, that shit is when I say how Peter's brain works.
Yeah.
It's stuff like that. Just logical, like, okay, we're doing this, but are we following up on that? And I think that...
Yeah.
Our customers are going to benefit so much from that. I will say that we've got a wife and a child on their way up, so is going
to
end.
Well, I'll keep this very brief then and bring it back to a bit of Drive to Survive and Will Buxton-esque quote here, right?
Oh, yeah.
To stop accidents from happening, you need to complete the actions that will stop those accidents from happening.
Yeah. And just for me, it's like we can really take this, particularly the technical side of safety, and just... There's so many businesses out there, still now to this date, who do safety shit.
Yeah.
Even though they're interacting with some big companies.
I've got to jump in, right? I do want to stress, though, that the fact that they might not be doing it in the best way isn't necessarily on purpose.
Oh, no, they think they're doing it good.
People, we only know what we know.
Yeah.
And we only know what we're aware of, that we understand. And again, one of the real things that I'm so excited for with the work that we get to do together is engaging with all of these businesses who want to improve their safety, who've engaged with us at Risk Fluent to make safety better for them, their business, their people, and their future.
And the thing you'll learn...
Incredible.
The thing you'll probably learn, I'm going to say you don't know it, you probably do know it, but the biggest challenge I discovered was you have to help a company unlearn safety first before learning safety, really.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, the Rams are getting approved. So, and you look at the Rams and you're like, fucking hell, how are these getting approved? And it very much is just like, the way that people do it, they don't know any other, so they think it's good safety. So we have to help them unlearn it first. And that's why when I think in my head, I expected when you said, what am I excited about the most? I expected to say the transfer, having time to do the transformational stuff. But actually, I am more excited about seeing what we could do in the technical side of things and bringing that to the transformational side of things. They're not different.
I totally agree with you. And it's like you were saying at the start, these aren't mutually exclusive things. No. They link together, they are holistic as part of a bigger picture of improving safety, of improving operational performance.
Yeah.
I said it to you before, I think I said it in a previous, in one of the quarterly co-hosts, for me, safety is an outcome of operational excellence.
Mm.
And I cannot wait to get my teeth into helping businesses be the best that they can possibly be. Because that is...
Mate. I'm buzzing, mate. And, well, that's the first episode of that you've been involved in Rebranding Safety show, as we're calling it for now. But thank you very much and welcome to the team.
Thank you very much. Honestly, I couldn't be happier. Really couldn't.
Me too. Oh.
Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.